And testing, 1, 2, level check. Level check looks good. All right. I am fixing my nose, and here we go. 3, 2, 1. Well, with MSO News Sports, I'm Rick Moore, and we're back with basketball insider Mike Grenier. And Mike, Saturday night, where do we even start? Celtics tied it up somehow.
Well, it was a long night into day because I know I was up till 3 a.m. Watching and reviewing important play after the Celtics beat the Heat 104 to 103 in Game 6 of the Eastern Conference Finals. And you look at it now, what a unique opportunity for the Celtics. Down 3-0 in the history of the playoffs of the NBA, teams are 0 and 150, which initially I thought was Jackie Bradley Jr.'s batting average.
Yeah.
But now they become just the fourth team to tie it up at 3-3 in the history of the playoffs. And the previous three teams, which go all the way back to 1950, have all lost the Game 7 after tying it up 3-3. But all those teams were on the road.
Mm-hmm.
So the Celtics become the first team in NBA history to come back from 3-0 with a chance to win it at home. And, of course, that game is Monday night, Memorial Day night of all times, at the Boston Garden. And that place, I guarantee you, will be rocking. It was just incredible game last night. Of course, the Celtics saw a 9 or 10 point lead disappear in the final 3 minutes, only to come up with a miraculous finish with Derek White. I actually tweeted, Rick, that if Derek White's fingernails were a little bit longer, that shot would not have been off in time, because he literally released it with, I want to say, 0.2 seconds left.
Mm-hmm.
And the Miami Heat initially thought the shot did not count, so they were rejoicing. But after the referees got together briefly, they counted the shot, which was the right call.
When I saw it live, I thought that the game was over too. And I saw,
right.
I think it was Derek White, doing the gesturing, basket, basket, basket.
Right.
And I'm thinking, oh boy, here we go again. So much to dissect, but I want to go back to Game 5 first. In order for us to get to Game 6, we had to do Game 5.
Yeah.
And you were at that game?
Yes, I was.
So you were mentioning, and I think that the write-ups mentioned it too, the atmosphere at the Garden was pretty electric.
Yes, Paul, and it was electric from the very beginning. The crowd really wanted to, like, they can't make the plays for the Celtics, but they can certainly elevate their energy by being loud. And they were loud from the very opening tap-off. And Paul Pierce happened to be there. Who won it all with the Celtics in 2008, one of the all-time Celtic greats. And he energized the crowd when they showed him on the big screen, and he was going crazy from his first row seat. So the crowd was so loud in that first quarter, and I thought it really did energize the Celtics. And, of course, they led by as many as 24 in the fourth quarter. I remember specifically 96-72 with 8 or 9 minutes left in the game. And so that game was a foregone conclusion at that point. So they rode that sort of energy into Game 6 in Miami last night. And, boy, they really did some great things. And, then, of course, they did some bad things in the final 3 minutes, you know.
It's, yeah, that's scary. It is, because it just evokes so many bad memories of so many lapses that they've had. And when they're on, they're on. And, yep. We'll go over some stuff. But I was just thinking of that last play when White tipped it in, of the old Larry Bird stealing it at the end of the game, Larry Bird to Dennis Johnson. And
right.
It was that kind of a play. Like, how does that happen?
Well, wow. Funny, Rick, you should mention that, because I actually tweeted just a few minutes ago some memorable Celtics history. Havlicek steals the ball,
yep.
1965. Larry Bird steals the ball, 1987. And Derek White steals the win.
Yep.
2023.
Yeah.
It really ranks with some of the greatest clutch plays in the history of Celtics basketball. So, incredible play by Derek White, who inbounded the ball. That's a key thing.
Mm-hmm.
He inbounded the ball, and then he took a wide turn, like an airplane getting on the runway, the correct runway at Logan Airport. And Max Strus, the Miami defender, lost him in the shuffle. And Derek White was right there to tip it in. Derek White said after the game, no one covered me
mm-hmm.
after Marcus Smart took the shot. So he was there to make the jump and just push the ball up against the glass with, like I said, like 0.2 seconds left. You can't catch and shoot with 0.3 seconds left. You have to tip the ball in.
Mm-hmm.
That was the situation. So he wasn't able to fully grab the ball, but he kind of pushed it towards the glass, and it went in off the glass. And had Marcus Smart's shot rimmed out to the right side, Jason Tatum was already floating in and was in midair and would have had, probably had the same opportunity as Derek White had the ball gone on the other side of the basket.
Wow. Well, you know, the thing is, a lot of guys contributed, but then there's that let up in the fourth quarter that's just so scary. And I think you made note of the fact that, you know, and we talked earlier how Malcolm Brogdon was in a slump, and now we know why.
Right.
But he couldn't even play last night.
Right, and you're right, and I think that it actually hurt the Celtics because Grant Williams, who's had some very good games in the playoffs, got those minutes in Game 6, and he wasn't up to the task. He played 22 minutes. He was 0-for-4 from the floor. He had 1 point total. He was a little bit reckless on defense. I remember him crashing into Adebayo once for just a senseless foul. So he has to control his emotion and control his ability to play if the same situation arises in Game 7 where I'm assuming Brogdon might still be out. Therefore, Grant Williams will have to come through if it's going to be a winning effort. You know, Rick, I think we should point out that the defensive effort by both teams in Game 6 was ferocious. It was absolutely ferocious. They were contesting everything. Every play was physical. Every shot was contested. Every rebound was contested by both teams. That's why players were gassed last night, and that's why essentially it was a low-scoring game, 104-103, because both teams were just hammering each other on defense.
And the Celtics, I don't know how many turnovers they had, but they still had those lapses, even when they were in the lead, of the unforced turnover. And, you know, I think in Game 5 they did not. They protected the ball very well. But last night, not so much, and that's a concern.
It's a concern because it's been a consistent thing with them where they turn the ball over and where they let big leads disappear. And not the last night's game was a big lead, but it was 9 points with like 3:04 left. Mm-hmm. 9 points, as I recall, with 3:04 left. And they couldn't convert on the ensuing possessions that they had. And, of course, Jimmy Butler, who had had a terrible game, got it going in those final 3 minutes and, of course, was able to put him ahead with the three clutch free throws with 3 seconds left. But, Rick, we should point this out. I'll tell you what, going into Game 7, and I think Gary Larrabee, our friend and colleague, my longtime colleague at the Cleveland News, he likes to point out that this, and I think even Eric Spoelstra has said there's no carryover in momentum from one game to the other. Mm-hmm. And I believe he's correct because every game is its own entity. However, I will say this. Jimmy Butler played 47 minutes last night and was 5-for-21. Bam Adebayo, their second best player, played 46 minutes last night and was 4-for-16. They shot a combined 9-for-37, and they essentially played the entire game, both of them. So momentum may not carry over, but fatigue does travel.
Well, we saw that with the Celtics last year. They got fatigued.
Yeah, that's right.
And they were a younger team.
Tatum. So one thing I'll be looking for in Game 7 is just Butler and Adebayo fall a little bit short on their shots, usually with front rimming the ball. But that has to carry over, their fatigue, because they were asked to play nearly 48 minutes last night, and they gave it their all. But they ended up losing, and now they have to travel to Boston for a Game 7. And, of course, the crowd will be going crazy tomorrow night. So Adebayo and Butler gave it their best shot last night, and it still wasn't enough. So we'll see what happens. I still thought the role players for Miami played great. Caleb Martin had, like, 21 points. He had a double-double. You know, Duncan Robinson has sort of restored himself as a great three-point shooter. He had, like, 15, 16 points. So many things go into this Game 7 tomorrow. You just don't know which Celtics team is going to show up. Are they going to have a lot of turnovers, or are they going to shoot a lot of threes? Last night, another thing we should point out, 7-for-35 from three-point land, the Boston Celtics. Their lowest percentage of the season, regular season or playoffs, 20%.
Yep, well.
So whereas they shot something like 65, 70% on two-pointers, and Charles Barkley was pointing out saying, let's ditch the three-pointers for a while and keep taking the twos because they were getting good looks and converting on two-point baskets.
Yeah, good point. And, you know, we know that the Celtics are a good shooting team, so I doubt that three-point slump is going to continue. And I also think it's important that the refs continue to let them play like they did in the first half. They didn't do it so much in the second half, but in the first half, it was a very physical game. And then As I was reading in the Globe today, that some of the fouls that were called in the second half were not fouls in the first half. So,
right.
But I think my point is, if the Celtics can be physical, they can maybe take advantage of some of the fatigue that could be setting in Miami. But then we don't know how fatigued the Celtics are either.
Right, right. Although I got to say, at least Mazzulla was switching out Al Horford with Robert Williams several times last night. And Robert Williams, I thought, was a great defensive presence last night.
Mm-hmm.
He blocked a couple of shots. He was there in the middle to deter some shots. I thought he played a great game in terms of his, like, his court vision. I didn't think he made any glaring mistakes, and I just thought he stood pat when he should have been standing pat. And he went out and blocked shots when he felt capable of blocking shots, and he got some big, big rebounds and outlet passes. So he played an essential role last night. But, you know, has been all year. He's shooting 23% on threes in this series, and Jaylen Brown is shooting 17% on threes through six games. So that cannot continue if the Celtics are going to win this game Monday night. I think they have to, their priority should be taking the two-point shots and taking it to the basket and drawing fouls perhaps. And then, you know, if Miami plays that zone defense and you find the openings, then you take the threes. But I think the Celtics have been so far off on their three-point shooting that they have to concentrate and get it. To me, my opinion is they need to take more two-point shots tomorrow night than three-point shots.
But they used to have, you know, great contributions from Sam Hauser all year long on those threes. Just a quick two or three, four of them, and that would seem to get everybody back on track. And
right.
Hauser, I don't know, maybe they shouldn't be using him in the playoffs, but I miss his gunning up there.
Rick, I couldn't agree more. I mean, Hauser played like a minute and a half or something last night, and he didn't even take a shot. And when Miami goes to a zone, when you're moving the ball, you know, in left to right, right to left, and middle to left, that's where Hauser can get open against the zone.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd experiment with playing him for, giving him 4 or 5 minutes so that he gets a couple looks. And if he hits the threes, you keep him in there, and he plays 8 or 9 minutes total maybe, or 11 minutes. And if he's not hitting the three, then you pull him out. I think Mazzulla feels he's a defensive liability, but I thought the latter part of the season, having seen virtually every game, I thought Hauser defense improved in the latter part of the season. I think he should be giving it a shot. But Mazzulla's only going to play at this point with so much on the line in Game 7. I get the feeling that he's going to go with 7 guys.
Yeah.
You know, and, of course, Spoelstra has sort of been doing the same thing with Miami, and you know, he's been going with 7 or 8 guys, but he has a real feel for the game, and Mazzulla's still learning. I got to give Mazzulla credit. He's doing a much better job on timeouts.
He is doing a
much better job on timeouts, calling them at opportune times and coming up with strategy and devising plays. He's doing much better than he did early in the playoffs.
He had a couple of critical ones last night. Most assuredly the last one.
No doubt.
Those are great. Okay, so let me see now. Monday night.
Who thought we'd go there? And you know, Rick, it's funny. Monday night, Memorial Day. Again, historically, I'm thinking Memorial Day 1985, after the Celtics had won the title in 1984. It was Game 1 against the Lakers in the finals.
Right.
And the final was Boston 148, Lakers 114. They called it the Memorial Day Massacre. Now, however, the Lakers ended up winning that series.
Yep.
6 games. So therefore, you know, it didn't translate well, that particular Memorial Day Massacre. But, you know, the Celtics hope to make history tomorrow night.
Well, they're
0-150 and were down 3 games to nothing. So they could certainly change history there.
And we've talked about the law of averages, and the point is now is they're not 0-3, they're not 1-3, they're not 2-3, they're 3-3.
Right.
It's a one game season for some team, you know, that's it.
Yeah.
And I think that I think we all agree if the Celtics play their best and Miami plays its best, the Celtics will win.
Yeah, I agree with that because they have better overall talent. And I think because of what I just pointed out, and the national announcers obviously were pointing out that Jimmy Butler's legs weren't there in the final minutes of the final game last night, the overall game, six, you know, 5-21 from the floor, until that burst of energy in the final 3 minutes of the game. He had a very poor game, as did Bam Adebayo. So you can't ignore 5-for-21 and 4-for-16 by the two top players and playing almost 48 minutes. I wouldn't say Miami's like in trouble as a team because they have other players who can stand up to it. However, those two main guys need to show that they have the energy to play a 48-minute game tomorrow. Remains to be seen. They're two great players, Adebayo and Butler, but they were forced to play an awful lot of minutes. Even Jason Tatum, who was 25 years old, you know, he played 44 minutes, and I think Jaylen Brown played like 41. And, of course, feeding off the energy of a home crowd in Game 7 will certainly help Tatum and Brown tomorrow, as well as the rest of the Celtics crew.
And you talk about the announcers. I have to tell you, I've not listened to one sentence from the national announcers. I watched the complete game with the sound off.
Well, I've done that oftentimes. And, you know, I think the TNT crew is better than the ESPN crew. And, of course, the Celtics and Heat have the TNT crew. But they're not much better. Stan Van Gundy can't stop talking. Reggie Miller's pretty good, but Kevin Harlan, who's been around for a long time, even in the regular season, he treats every basket the game winner of the playoffs.
Yeah, he does that. Every sport,
his voice, you know.
Every sport he announces, he does that, and I think he's actually become he's become a caricature of himself. I thought at one time he was a fantastic announcer. I don't think that anymore.
Right, and of course we get to hear him a lot, so maybe we get tired of him.
There you go.
that happens to be the case, but I do like to listen to, you know, to Kenny Smith and of course Shaq, who I can't understand at all times. And certainly Barkley he goes out on a limb, he makes these wild predictions and all that, but he's certainly not afraid to give an opinion, and a lot of times he's correct, and he's able to perceive the strengths and weaknesses of both teams, and he puts himself out there, and he's very entertaining, of course, and he's been around, and he's been around a long time, and he's always loved the way Larry Bird played and the Celtics play, and last night he was sort of putting down the Celtics because of blowing the lead, but you know, the bottom line is he even told Jaylen Brown, when Jaylen Brown visited the set in the post game, he said to Jaylen Brown, as Jaylen Brown was departing the TNT desk, he said, "Hey, you don't make history until you win Game 7." And Jaylen Brown acknowledged that. And,
yep,
of course, Jaylen Brown turned around and started shaking hands with Celtics fans who were still in the stands
an
hour after the game.
That's cool. Yeah, I don't doubt Jaylen Brown's professionalism or loyalty. And, you know, if he does end up somewhere else, it's because it benefits him and his family, and I'm okay with that. But I certainly hope he stays. He's a consummate Celtic. He's an enigma sometime, but you know, he's a terrific professional, and he gives it everything he's got, whether they win or lose.
Right, I agree with that, Rick. Also, we should point out that in a game that obviously the Celtics had to win, a must-win game, Tatum did respond with 25 points in the opening half. And even though his shooting cooled off in the second half, you know, he put them ahead in the first half by scoring 25. He was hitting a couple threes. He was taking it to the basket, and he finished 15-for-15 from the foul line.
Yeah, that was something. I did see that, yeah.
That's clutch shooting in a huge game. I think he was 11-for-11 in the opening half, and he finished 15-for-15. Yeah, you know, his concentration level was right there in the biggest game, you know, what became the biggest game of the season, Game 6.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now, final thoughts is that, for me, are that we've had too many Game 7 losses at home recently between the Bruins and the Celtics.
Yep.
So it's time for a win.
It is time for a win, and despite the history of 0-150 of games, you know, down teams that were down 3-0, the Celtics do have, I think, a phenomenal feeling about what could happen at Game 7. And I think they kind of think the locker room attitude will be, we're not going to let this one get away. I think that's going to be the locker room attitude. My one wish is that Malcolm Brogdon was healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Because in a Game 7, he's that, we've talked about him, Rick, that implacable poker face. He would be the type of guy that could score anywhere from 12 to 20 points in a Game 7 because nothing seems to faze him. And to have him, I don't know what the percentage is, if he's 75% ready to go or just 25% ready to go for Game 7, he would make a difference. But assuming he doesn't play, I still think they have the talent and the experience now, because Jaylen Brown's been around for 7 years and Tatum's been around for 6 years. They have the experience to pull through in a Game 7 situation. But it should be a phenomenal atmosphere at the Boston Garden, and that place will be extremely boisterous.
All right, that's Mike Grenier, our basketball insider. With MSO News Sports, I'm Rick Moore.